This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Hello, this is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It's the 12th day of March 2010, and today I'm honored to be joined on the line by Sybelle Edmonds, a FBI translator who was fired from her position after blowing the whistle on the explosive activities of bureau officials and top U.S. government officials that she uncovered while discharging her duties in that position. She can be found at justacecitizen.com and boilingfrogspost.com. Sybelle Edmonds, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, today I wanted to talk specifically about S-372, a draconian new piece of legislation that's making its way through the Senate that would threaten to strip what very few protections national security whistleblowers enjoy under the current Whistleblower Protection Act. But before we get into that, I think it would be instructive for listeners and viewers if you talked a little bit about your own experience blowing the whistle and the various problems that you've faced attempting to blow the whistle on FBI malfeasance and government corruption. So in your own words, can you tell us about your experience and the problems that you've faced bringing that experience to the light of public scrutiny?
Sure. Let me start with the whistleblowing aspects of it. And what I'm going to tell you actually is going to be something that you'll get to hear a lot from many whistleblowers, government whistleblowers. I really didn't think I was blowing the whistle. What I did was what actually I had taken the oath to do, and that was to report wrongdoing or criminal activities or government waste, fraud management to the appropriate, in quote, appropriate authorities, which would be the Inspector General's office. And since I worked for the FBI, the Inspector General's office for the Justice Department, and to the appropriate committee, which in this case was House and the Senate Judiciary Committee and or Intelligence Committee. So in my mind at the time, I didn't even consider myself a whistleblower. I came across wrongdoing, and I took those issues to my supervisors and my supervisor's supervisors and their managers and all the way up to the director of the Bureau, Federal Bureau of Investigations, and that is Director Mueller's office. And instead of acting on the issues that I reported, documented report, I started facing retaliation immediately. They started taking some of my tasks away. And in fact, at this time, I had not even gone to the Congress or the Inspector General's office. I was not even planning to do it. I thought if I were to report this to my superior and supervisors, it would just be an address. Well, that was not the case. In fact, this is the FBI, they accused me of disclosing this information to Congress, which I had not, and they sent agents to my home. They asked these agents to come and confiscate my home computer and my husband's computer, business computer, because they believed I had contacted congressional members by email and I had reported these issues. Well, they took my computer away and they took it apart and they couldn't find anything because I had not done so. About a week after that, they actually ordered me to take a polygraph to say whether or not I had disclosed this information, not to the public, not to the media, but to Congress, and this is the FBI. And they gave me two options, whether I would take the polygraph and pass, or I would fail, and if I didn't take the polygraph, they would fire me. That would be ground to fire me, to terminate my contract. This was when I decided, okay, I am being retaliated against. Where do I go? So I started doing my own research, and I believed at the time, and I was proven wrong later, that there were three channels to pursue, okay? One was within the executive branch, go to the number one, Office of Professional Responsibility within the FBI that supposedly investigates FBI matters. Also within the executive branch, go to the Justice Department's Inspector General's office, you know, contact them, go meet with them, and confidentially disclose the fact that these were the issues I reported and this is how I'm being retaliated against. and within the Congress, go to the Judiciary Committee. And my other option, based on what I had researched, was to go and talk to an attorney and see if there is a need to pursue this in court. Okay, so basically you have the judicial, the legislative, and the executive branch. And looking at these options, I said, well, right now I don't have to go to court. Why am I going to court? They should address it. They are saying that Congress has the oversight responsibility. And also, they can hold people accountable. You know, they have the power of money for these agencies. And the Inspector General's office has been given the authority to investigate this. And that's exactly what I did. And that's when the real journey began, because the retaliation continued. And as soon as I went and disclosed this information, basically within a week, I was fired. And after that, I had basically, since then, 8 years. And I have lost the case in court. The Congress, they refused to act upon this. And even though the Inspector General's office's own report, surprisingly, because they usually have whitewash report, they say they couldn't, you know, the report couldn't be conclusive or even not really factual findings. This was a very interesting case because the Inspector General's office issued a report saying that I was right. And the FBI, the only reason they retaliated against me and they fired me was because I had brought up these issues both internally and then to the Inspector General's office. Well, in the end, that didn't make any difference because it ended there. So I had a great glowing report from the Inspector General's office, and I had some glowing remarks initially. These were from, you know, bipartisan two senators from the Judiciary Committee at the time, Senator Grassley and Senator Leahy. They came publicly and they said I was courageous and I was brave, and the FBI had to be turned upside down, and a lot of hoorays from Congress, and how awful this thing was, that they were waiting for Inspector General's office's report, and once they got that report, they were going to do this. Well, it was nothing but sugarcoating the case, because in the end, they didn't do anything. They refused to hold hearings, and they refused to press the issue with the FBI. And not as an isolated case. This has been the case with almost every single whistleblower, for federal government whistleblowers, especially with the national security-related agencies such as the FBI and CIA, etc. And as for the courts, all the Justice Department had to do, the FBI, they just had to claim secrecy and classifications, and this draconian common law called state secrets privilege, it's an executive privilege, to have the court dismissed. And what they told the courts, this is the FBI, was it doesn't matter if Sabelle Edmonds is 100% right. It doesn't matter if we did all these things or not. Everything about her case is classified. Therefore, Your Honor, you should not even listen to this case. And that was it. And when they said this, when they claimed this, this is the Justice Department / FBI, I already had the Inspector General's report that had findings, and which was the unclassified version of it. And it didn't matter. In the end, it came down to really, even though there is this illusion of channels and these really great sounding legislation right now in place, when it comes to practice, really, it is not what it seems. You really don't have any channels. If they were implemented, those legislations, they were really practiced, even right now, not being complete, you still would say, okay, there is a course of action and there are channels, but the people, whether it's the Congress or the courts, they really have not done their jobs in terms of using their power in implementing these rights or really do their jobs in terms of oversight and accountability. And as long as that's the case, there are no channels. And when I established National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, we have more than 150 national security whistleblowers. The average years of experience for our members is 20-plus years. I mean, these are the veteran agents from the DEA and DIA and CIA and the FBI. Well, when we first started this organization, all of us together, not a bureaucratic NGO that is there with big board of directors, none of whom are whistleblowers, but we were just whistleblowers. We don't have anyone but whistleblowers. No headquarters, no fundraising. we thought, okay, we will get together and we will try to pursue these issues collectively. Well, initially our motto, our message was, even though these channels really don't exist and they're not perfect, to be whistleblowers, pursue them. And once you exhaust them, then go to the media or disclose it publicly. Try to do it the way they are telling you to do it, even though it's not perfect. Well, this was our message to wannabe whistleblowers, people who were pondering, well, should I come forward? Should I do this? And after really campaigning in Congress, I mean, for 2 years, we had press conferences in front of various congressional offices. We had several hearings about oversight, about secrecy. Well, they were, you know, they were all in the end were proven futile. Nothing really changed. The media really didn't give it much coverage. And with Congress, basically, their position was, well, make us do it. I mean, we can talk a great story, but when it comes to really exercising our power, we don't want to do it. And unless there is a pressure, well, what kind of pressure did we have to put to place in Congress? With Congress, it seems like there are two things to do, carrots or sticks, and the carrots is the money. So if you're a big lobbying lobbyist and you are donating generously to congressional you know, campaigns, or if you have access to their constituents big time through the media, through solid media, sure, you can have that power of pressure. But then you're looking at an already marginalized group, whistleblowers, and the media even marginalized them further by usually depicting them as the disgruntled employees, etc. You don't have that power, and you don't have the sticks, and you don't have the carrots, and therefore Congress, even though it's the right thing to do, in fact, it is increasing their own power. Because we're saying we should be able to come and hand you this information. For oversight, you need information. You need to know what's going on inside these agencies. Do you believe the head of an agency, the director, is going to come and tell you the truth about what's happening, what the real problems are? Of course not. Basically, you depend on whistleblowers, these people, to come and disclose and give you information, so then you can go and implement your, you know, oversight responsibility, and then hold people accountable, or whatever it is you have been given the job to do. You have been elected to do this. Well, they actually decrease their own power, these congressional members, because they're saying, well, by not providing protection for these whistleblowers, and by not doing anything in terms of follow-up hearings and holding the agencies accountable, we are actually cutting ourselves from the information source for Congress to know what's going on within the executive branch. And the reason we had three branches were that, okay, that they were separate and they think that they could have oversight. Well, we haven't had these oversights. And whistleblower issues is just one of many. If you were to look at the approval rate for Congress, you will see that it's been plunging, because if you were to go and ask most Americans, they will tell you, no, they're not really being represented. And yes, the Congress has been failing the nation by not, you know, holding the executive branch accountable and practice real oversight authority. And again, not only in whistleblower cases, you come across this with all the torture cases and NSA's illegal wiretapping. If you were to look at all the big scandals that have surfaced in the past one decade, okay, related to the executive branch, and then if you were to go and see what Congress has done about these scandals and issues, you will see that there's been nothing, absolutely nothing. So it fits the same pattern. Because of that, after 2006, and I'll finish this, I will wrap it up, I won't go along with this, up until end of 2006, it was really interesting, the dynamic in the Congress, because we would go to these offices, and at that time, the Democrats were the minority, and they, behind the scenes, they were like patting our backs, saying, yes, you know, we want to hold hearings, we want to hold these agencies accountable, we want to pass this legislation. The only reason we are not able to do it because our hands are tied, because Republicans, the majority, the Bush administration, they are the ones who are preventing the hearings, because they have the power to prevent it and they have the power to override the legislation that we want to introduce for whistleblowers protection, and we were really gullible. We really believed it. So even though our organization is completely nonpartisan, I mean, we have equal number of Republicans and Democrat members, and we have several libertarians, we actually were cheering for the majority to change in November 2006 because we were given all these promises, and in fact, some of them in writing. If you were to go to our website, you would see some of these statements and some of the letters that we have scanned put on the website by people like Congressman Waxman at the time, saying, yes, we will do it if we were to be the majority. Well, as soon as they became the majority, they stopped taking calls from us, the whistleblowers, and on these legislation issues. They had promised us on the record that if they were to be, you know, Congress, they will have this and this and that hearing on this particular case, on this CIA state secrets privilege case, on FBI state secrets privilege case, my case. Well, none of those were fulfilled, and we ended up in this position of seeing the reality, and that was when we changed our message. We said, well, Congress needs to change. We need to change the Congress, and by we, I mean we mean the nation. And meanwhile, for people who see wrongdoings, the only course of action that we recommend, do it anonymously and just give it directly to the public. And don't bother pursuing these illusionary cosmetic channels and wayside, especially if the matters are urgent. We are not encouraging people to divulge truly classified information. We would never do that. But really, the number of truly classified information is not as high as you would or they want you to believe. There are so many issues that they can just willy-nilly stamp as classified or pretend they're classified, and like issues such as informant assets, those are the things that nobody ever should go and divulge. But in many cases, including the NSA's illegal eavesdropping, we have had the only whistleblower, public whistleblower from the NSA, and Russell Tite. He's been our member since 2004. He's been active with us in Congress. Those are the issues that these whistleblowers or wannabe whistleblowers or anonymous whistleblowers, when they come to us, we encourage them to find the safest way to disclose it to the public and let the public know.
Well, that's right, and you raise a number of very important points there, including not only how the attempt to silence whistleblowers and critics of the establishment is not only a bipartisan endeavor, but also is facilitated by the complicity of the mainstream media, which has really worked to cover up stories like yours rather than report them, which one would expect would be their duty. But I guess for the benefit of those listeners who may not know your story, what type of information did you uncover in the course of your duties, and why would the establishment be so afraid of that information getting out to the public?
Well, the information involved the foreign operatives in the United States with their lobbying entities, who were colluding with U.S. persons and people, both elected officials, but also U.S. officials within the executive branch, in obtaining classified, highly classified U.S. Intelligence and military secrets, congressional bribery, and in some cases that had to do with Chicago, it had to do with narcotics dealings. And again, because it involved not only these foreign entities, but also their U.S. Citizens, counterparts, who happened to be officials, again, both elected and appointed, and the fact that these officials were, they came from both parties, they were not only Republicans or Democrats, ended up being this hot potato that nobody wanted to touch. The Obama administration today would be as wary of it as the Bush administration before him. And with Congress, the same thing. It involved Democrats and it involved Republicans. And that also brings up another issue with some of the intelligence agencies, or at least counterintelligence-related divisions, let's say within the FBI. I remember before I reported these issues, the agent, the supervisor agent that I was reporting to, a very nice man, a great, solid, great agent, patriotic, he asked me not to pursue it. He said nothing good will come out of it, and who will you go to when you decide to go to, you're planning to go to Congress, who will you go to? And how would you determine if that particular congressman, you know, or a senator is actually clean? And that's the word he used. He said, just from the Turkish counterintelligence-related operations, you know of 14, 15 extremely criminal, dirty elected officials who have been receiving illegal campaign donations from foreign entities, who have been engaged in various both sexual and financial-related scandals that have not been public, that FBI has been keeping, by the way, in their records. They have not done anything with these records. And that's only from the Turkish division. And he actually pointed to the rest of the room because we had all these cubicles and desks from the Hebrew, you know, and Arabic and Urdu translators. Said, these are the ones you know of. There are so many that you don't know that these people know of. You know, whether it is people who are working the Pakistani desk or the Saudi Arabia desk or the Israel desk. And how are you going to know who is clean to go to? And at the time, I thought he was being cynical. Today, I don't, because you do, especially working with these national security whistleblowers, the known ones, and also we have members who are not publicly listed on our website, that indeed we have too many traitors within these both agencies and within Congress. And that itself defeats the purpose. You know, you're going to go to whom?
Well, that's right, and it is a question of who is watching the people who are in charge of the oversight, and if they're involved in these types of activities, how are they going to conduct proper oversight or bring this story to light, which of course begs the question of the complicity of the mainstream media in failing to report your story and the stories of other whistleblowers like yourself. To what extent has the mainstream media avoided your story, and what role does the media play in shaping our understanding of whistleblower protections?
I consider the role of media, I consider them to be the fourth branch, by the way, but the role of media most important, the most important role actually is the media. It's more important than the courts, including the Supreme Court, the President's office, and the Congress, because with media pressure, things can happen. If the with their pressure, you can have Congress act because they would feel the heat. The pressure. You know, everybody wants to get reelected. That's a fact. The same thing is with the White House. So without that pressure, and that pressure has not been there, and again, it's not only on whistleblower issue. Whistleblower issue is one of many, many issues. They have not felt the pressure, the heat, to really get down and try to do or even pretend to do the job and to do the right thing. And that's why I consider media to be the most important. No, initially, I was featured in CBS 60 Minutes. This was a 15-minute segment. In fact, they re-aired it two more times. And you know that millions of people watch CBS 60 Minutes, but they were very selective. They did not want to cover anything that has to do with people like corrupt congressional people, about the Turkish lobby. They didn't want to cover that, and they made it clear. Even though some questions came up during filming, that was not their focus. The focus was the drama of, okay, you look, in my case, look at this cute little pretty patriotic translator, and the FBI beat that FBI. They fired her, and they retaliated against her. And it just ended up being a kind of an employment drama and not the fact that, well, why did I blow the whistle? What were those cases? Who were involved in those cases? Who needed protection from these cases from becoming public? So those were not the issues they touched. And if you were to go and search, you will see New York Times article, you would see, you know, CBS 60 Minutes, et cetera, you will see almost carbon copies kind of reporting. Whistleblowers, and of course, when the state secret privilege was invoked, I was the first victim of state secret privilege for Bush administration. They invoked state secret privilege on my case before they started, you know, invoking it right and left in so many cases, including NSA, but I was the first case. And we didn't have a single article that questions, why did they invoke state secrets privilege, let's say in Sydell Edmonds' case. This reporting was, they invoked this very draconian state secrets privilege that basically gagged Sydell Edmonds and classifies everything, okay? You would, when you report something, you want to answer questions, or you're looking for answers that answer questions like who, why, what. It was not that. It was the fact that they invoked, the government invoked state secrets privilege and never wanting to know more than that or print anything more than that, that why would they go to such extent to gag and, you know, shut a whistleblower up and the courts, and even, you know, they actually banned reporters from attending the court session for the appellate court, which was really unprecedented for an FBI case. We have had, you know, in the history of these cases, we have had it maybe with the CIA and maybe a couple of military intelligence related cases, but they have never had it in an FBI case where FBI comes and says all reporters should be basically banned from the court, and the court's actually going along with it, the judges, and they grant that motion. Yet that didn't get any coverage. Why? The question was why, and nobody wanted to ask that question. They didn't want to touch the really hot aspects of this case. They just wanted to be, oh, here are these poor whistleblowers and the government is retaliating against them. And a few days later, it's all forgotten. You know, with Watergate, you had these issues pursued on a daily, weekly basis for a long time for it to produce results. If you don't, you know, follow up on these, nothing will come out of it. And the Congress and the executive branch and everyone has, you know, they have learned. We can weather this one too. NSA illegal eavesdropping, you know, comes out in New York Times. It becomes a hot issue. If you don't do anything, just sit quietly, don't do anything, it goes away. A few weeks, if you're lucky.
That's right. And on the issue of the state secrets privilege, I'd like to direct listeners and viewers to an op-ed piece that you wrote in November of last year for BoilingFrogsPost.com that talked about the way that the media has, in recent reports about state secrets privilege, failed to acknowledge that your case was one of the first cases, or the first case it was invoked on, by the Bush administration, and instead focused on more war on terror-related stories and how that relates to state secrets privilege, which is an extremely...
I'm so glad you brought it up, because this is, and this unfortunately applies even more so to alternative media. That was the part that was really shocking and outrageous for me. And not only my case, there are other cases. Richard Barlow, former CIA whistleblower, who actually was the first whistleblower on AQHAN network and how the U.S. government at the time went about hushing the issue and lying to Congress. He had state secrets privilege. We had a DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency's whistleblower, Richard Horn. And Richard Horn's case is tremendous. This was a case that dealt with these DEA agents in Burma and how the State Department and CIA, they interfered and they tipped off the targets of investigation, which endangered their lives because they didn't want DEA to arrest these guys or make the case. It's a huge case. Nobody in the media, except for Narcosphere, Narco News, nobody has touched it. And even the judge in the case had said, well, CIA, you better settle this case because I'm not going to let you stick this state-secret privilege for too long. So CIA is right now, and it's not the CIA, DEA is, they are settling this case for like $2 million or $2.5 million as a hush money, basically. No reporting on this. And it's not only failing to report these state-secret privilege cases, but we have our congressional sources, not the elected officials, but sometimes you find some really nice, hardworking aides who do see the wrong things there, and, you know, they sometimes come and they talk to you and they tell you what's going on inside. And they knowingly collude and with the Congress to make sure that in their reporting of state secrets privilege, they will leave out any name that sounds Western or American, or the cases that are American, like Sydell Edmonds' case, Richard Horn's case, Richard Barlow's case. None of these cases, they list all the cases. You keep coming across Al-Haramian case, and all these Arabic names, and they make it as if the government is invoking these truly anti-American, anti-democratic. It is unconstitutional because it never passed as a law, state secrets privilege. It was based on common law, it's an executive privilege that has never been really tested or taken up by the Congress. But to make it these Arab names and that it has to do with the terrorists and the war on terror, and therefore not bringing the public attention for majority of the public, unfortunately, they are uninformed and they believe, oh, well, maybe the government must do this stuff to protect us against some big bad terrorists. And again, the most surprising part is I have seen this done because the mainstream media, they don't even really report on anything that has to do with state secrets privilege. The worst reporting I have seen that are really censured, blacked out, and in fact, I know for a fact from a congressional office that has been produced by colluding with Congress are coming from some of the alternative media channels.
Right, that's very surprising and very, very lamentable, as one would expect the alternative media would be the last source that people can go to get these types of stories out to the public. But bringing this conversation into the current context, and I know that that the oversight that's provided as the approved oversight and channels for whistleblowing through government agencies is not only far from perfect, but fundamentally corrupt. But even as corrupt as it is, it seems that it is going to get even worse for national security whistleblowers with S-372. So let's talk a little bit about this new legislation and your response to this bill.
Exactly. And as I said, we have not been dealing much with Congress. That's one of the reasons I started boiling frogs pose and I started gathering a team of former and current reporters and say, okay, through editorial and public education, we try to, pursue these issues in terms of what really needs to change, macro-level issues with Congress and why we are where we are today as a nation. But I really didn't think it could get any worse until it was brought to my attention that this was what the Senate was looking at and this is what they wanted to do. And once I started reading, I thought, well, I was wrong. It can't get worse. Actually, it's such a terrible position to be in, to have something really bad that you want to discard and say, you know what, it's been getting every year actually worse. It's nothing. It's some cosmetic illusion of protection for whistleblowers. And it may be in some, you know, rare cases for some whistleblowers, but certainly these don't apply to national security whistleblowers. And also the fact that, you know, if you look at the past 10, 15 years, cases brought in court, and you know, the whistleblower cases, you will see how many have really succeeded, which tells you it doesn't work. And not only that, many whistleblowers will tell you, and I'm talking about the true, genuine whistleblowers, because, I don't know, the term can be applied to many people, or some people, they assume that title. With our organization, we do not accept members that we believe they did something and when, or they asked their agency for something and then they were not promoted or they were kind of upset, then they went and actually disclosed some, even if it's factual information, that's like, okay, here I'm getting my revenge. One of the things we do is we investigate the case and we have network of people from all agencies. So quickly I can establish records on a particular person who wants to become a member of NSWBC, whether this person is someone we consider legitimate whistleblower or is someone who's doing it for publicity or is doing it after the fact. It's like, well, I didn't get what I want, so I'm going to go and blow whistle on you. Anyway, well, it has obviously gotten worse because I started reading this and I'm like, well, I was wrong. It can get even worse because we said, well, discard the entire thing because it's illusionary. And now we are in a position of saying, keep this terrible provisions that we already have in place and don't make it any worse. And again, as I said, it's a really awful position to be in. And this is why we haven't been really dealing with other organizations because they usually leave out the national security whistleblowers. They try to. There's so many organizations out there that think, well, this is what we do. We're doing providing protection or helping, you know, the whistleblowers to get more protection, but actually they are not. If anybody really wants, as an organization with funding, wants to help whistleblowers, the already lost their job, most of these people don't have big savings, provide them legal services for free or help them get it. Nobody does. You know, it's not really helping whistleblowers. It's just this annual parade of we try to get Congress to do this, and even when they fail, they pat themselves on the shoulder and say, now please give us funding because we went there and we tried. And a lot of them have been doing this dance, this tango for more than two decades. So think about it. Things have been getting worse, and that's all they've been doing, or they've been saying they've been doing, not legal representation or any of these services, but what they consider to be legislative, and things have been getting worse. So obviously they're not effective. Maybe they're making things worse. I don't know. But this, again, back to your question, this is making something really, really bad worse. And that's the position we are in, and this is why we have joined the National Whistleblowers Center, saying, well, you're right. And we are glad that you're bringing it up. And we support your position, and as long as we emphasize that the current system in place is truly terrible to start with. So it won't be a big hooray, even if, let's say, this doesn't go through or if these provisions are not inserted in it, we won't be celebrating as national security whistleblowers. We would just say, oh, well, good that it didn't get worse.
Right, exactly. So we can dodge this bullet, but the system still needs fundamental changes. And I guess moving forward from that, then the question becomes, how does one get information about things like S-372 and other important whistleblower legislation if we can't rely on the mainstream media and often can't even rely on the organizations that are supposedly acting in the interests of whistleblowers? Where do people go for genuine and unbiased information on these issues?
Currently, Mr. Colbert, none. There are no channels. There's no place. And this is, again, 4.5, 5 months ago, I started this website, and I'm hoping to accomplish that and at least put this information out there for the public to see. Because, you know, a lot of people, and these are like good average Americans, they don't think it affects them. They think this is something between an employee that was mistreated. I mean, if you were to go ask any of these individuals, do you think there should be protection for people who disclose? They will say, of course, absolutely. But when it comes to these little isolated cases they see, because the media presents them as isolated cases, even once in a while when they cover, you know, tiny bit, then they see themselves removed. They think it's a whistleblower issue. I mean, Steve Cohn explains this point very, very well. If you were to listen to him when he talks about these whistleblower rights, it's not only whistleblowers on employment issues. As I have said, how will the reason we know what we know anything, you know, in this country is because of whistleblowers. There were these anonymous whistleblowers who went to the New York Times, and they disclosed information about the fact that Americans were being illegally spied on. Granted, nothing good came out of it. They are still doing it. It has been accepted, kind of. But how did we find out? Because of whistleblowers, those people who went and they took it upon themselves and they disclosed it. The only reason we know is because of them. And if you look at any major issues, you would know that the government is not going to come and tell you how they are engaged in waste and fraud and abuse and criminal conduct in some cases. Of course they're not going to come and tell you. So when they are engaged in these activities, using taxpayers' money and sacrificing people, American civil liberties, their privacy, you know, defrauding them, who is going to let the American people know that this is what's happening, you know, in the government agency, within these government agencies? No one. Because when they do their biannual or more frequent reporting to Congress, what do you see from somebody like Director Mueller? Do you think his report is going to include the fact that, well, they hired 5 translators who actually were big-time security risks, and without passing through thorough background checks, and because of that they have lost 2 informants and they have to shut down 1 case? Of course not. They're not going to tell us that. One of our whistleblower members is John Cole. This has to do with a software name which I can't recall right now, but in 2001 he was the head of the counterintelligence unit in the FBI. They were, Trilogy, the software. And this was the beginning of this implementation stage for this 5 years project, Trilogy software for the FBI, that they have put $700 million budget to get that was going to make the FBI in possession of one of the greatest and the best software. Well, within a year or so, he witnessed what was going on inside, and he went to Congress and said, this is not going to work, and here are all the stuff, and the people, the contractors who got this, they got it through these, cronyism and nepotism, and here are all the stuff that is wrong, and so far we have spent $50 million, this is not going to work. He supplied this congressional offices with like hundreds of pages of documentation, right? Nobody did anything. Meanwhile, every year, Mueller went to Congress and said, Trilogy software is coming along great. It's fantastic. We are getting there. We're going to have the greatest and the best software in place. In 2006, we saw this headline saying they had to throw out the entire software, Trilogy, and $700 million of taxpayers' money was wasted and start all over again with another company. Well, this issue was raised when we were down with our taxpayers' money, $50 million. $650 million of taxpayers' money in some case could have been saved. So this is just one tiny little example. And also the discouraging influence that it has, because when other people in possession of this type of information, they see that, well, the ones who do disclose go to Congress or media, nothing happens. And the public, they are not really considering it their duty to support these whistleblowers and these issues. Well, why should I maybe I should just shut my mouth up and not do anything about it. And maybe it's not the right thing because nobody cares in the end anyway. I wouldn't be able to blame those people because a lot of people, they find themselves in that position in the end. They're like 10 years of fight or 5 years of fight, all this money with the attorneys, all this marriages that have been broken because of, and a lot of them go through that because of the stress, because people have put 20 years and they are maybe a few years away from retirement, losing everything, and in the end all they expected was people being held accountable and that some good will come out of their whistleblowing. Well, not only that, nothing good comes out of their whistleblowing. They get punished, and then in the end they feel or they see that no one cares. And again, media is the number one reason for that. Before any of these branches, I would hold media responsible for this.
That's right, and that's an extremely important point that I'd like the listeners and viewers out there to think about, because without the actions of whistleblowers like yourself, so much of the information that we have discovered about the criminal actions of people in government and sensitive agencies would not have come out. And this is not a peripheral issue by any means. This is something that's fundamental to the functioning of our democracy and something that we all need to be involved in whatever way we can, and supporting courageous whistleblowers like yourself who do come forward with their stories. So I realize that a lot of this conversation has been quite negative, but that's only because we face a very bleak and stark reality of just a climate that is in every way stacked against people who are threatening the establishment. But I guess trying to wrap this up on a positive note, in an ideal world, what kind of system would you like to see in place for the protection of whistleblowers?
Well, our founding fathers, they put, our constitution in place, and that should just suffice when you're looking at the First Amendment, right? And then when you look at our system that was set up, it hasn't been working. That system has collapsed. It has just not been working for a while, for a long time, of the separation of powers. This is exactly what they envisioned. Okay, people, even within some of these whistleblowers organizations, they keep talking about classified whistleblowing to Congress. That to me, I consider that really not constitutional. We have representatives there who represent the Americans and their best interests, okay? And they have been put in that office. And to say you can only disclose it to a certain office who has been granted clearance, and guess who grants the clearance? It's the executive branch, the congressional office, tells you that they have already gotten rid of the the separation of power. You know, people are saying, well, with the CIA detention or this torture case, we select only 6 or 7, you know, senators and with clearance, and we will only, we choose from them. Well, that's one of the main problems we have been facing today. So for then whistleblower organizations, for some of the so-called whistleblower organizations come and say, well, at least let whistleblowers can engage in classified disclosure. I tell those people that's making it worse because our Constitution has guaranteed those rights. And take those as your guidance, because usually those who are involved in making this sausage of legislation happen to be, most of them, the attorneys. And they bury a lot of stuff and notes. And how many whistleblowers, no matter how educated, can sit down and actually go through hundreds of pages to understand this legislation? If you were to go and ask anyone, they would be pretty much aware of their first and on their constitution, and I believe that protection has been granted to us, and we have those. And we really don't need legislation. We just need a Congress and representatives who are doing just that, representing the people. And if we have that, and if we go by our constitution, we don't need all this extra legislation, because in the long run, actually, these legislations, they make worse. And that's our stand. And again, I know it doesn't sound as academic, it doesn't sound as sophisticated as many legal scholars will put it, but that's based on experience, based on my experience, based on experiences of more than 100 whistleblowers we have seen. And in the end, I always say, I go by my constitutional rights. And I really take First Amendment seriously.
As we all should, because it's such an important issue. Well, if people want to support what you're doing with the National Security Whistleblower Center and also what you're doing on BoilingFrogsPost.com, what's the best way for people to do that?
With BoilingFrogsPost.com, what we do is basically myself, and I try to do as much as I can with research, writing articles on these issues, editorials, but I also, you know, we have put together a good team of reporters, and these are some of the veteran reporters who have often discussed it with the mainstream, and even some of the more successful so-called alternative, who want to do these reporting, who want to go after these stories and keep pounding and bringing the attention to it. For that, we need the public support, because I decided to go with Boiling Frog Post as an entity that is not supported by any foundations, because usually foundations, they carry their own set of objectives and goals that sometimes may not be in line with what we want to do. It's pretty bold and simple, or any corporate interest. So the only support that we have is from people, from the readership, to say, you know, through the radio interview, through these articles, I want these people to put this information out. In order to put the information out, they need my support, reader, and their support and donations. And by spreading the word, because with the internet today, we do have that opportunity for sending the links and sending these articles, like the State Secrets Privilege editorial piece that you mentioned. Many people don't get to even read anything on the State Secrets Privilege. So that helps with raising awareness.
Well, it certainly does, and once again, I'd just like everyone out there to realize just how important this is to the proper functioning of our democracy, and just what a terrible state of affairs we find ourselves in at the moment, and how important it is to get this information out to everyone. So I'd really like to thank you on behalf of all of my listeners for having the courage to step forward with the story and to pursue this over the many, many years that you have pursued this this incredibly important issue. And I just want to thank you for having done that.
And I want to thank you for covering this very important issue, as you know, many people do. And thank you on behalf of all our whistleblowers.
All right. Well, Ms. Edmonds, thank you for joining me today on the Corbett Report, and best of luck in all of your future endeavors.